May it please the court. The issue before the court this morning is quite simple. The court should make its preliminary writ permanent and order the Honorable Jack Gray to take no further action but to enter summary judgment on behalf of the City of Grandview, because the City of Grandview is vested with sovereign immunity from the claims in the underlying case. Briefly, the Green family is suing the City of Grandview and four of its police officers related to a traffic stop in November of 2012. The Greens are making claims of false arrest, battery, malicious prosecution, and negligence. All of those claims the city has sovereign immunity for. And a summary judgment motion was filed requesting that. The Greens also sued the City of Grandview for no specific cause of action, but for vicarious liability of the specific police officers. And the police, the City of Grandview is immune from those claims as well, because it is a governmental function to run and operate and supervise a police department. Again, the issue that we're here about is very simple, and the city simply has sovereign immunity. There are only four exceptions to the city's sovereign immunity. One or two of the exceptions are statutory waiver under section 537.600, which is the dangerous condition exception and the operation of a motor vehicle exception. Those don't apply here. Second, or the third exception to sovereign immunity is a proprietary function. That doesn't apply here as well. The city can also waive insurance or waive liability, or waive sovereign immunity, I'm sorry, by the purchase of insurance under the statute of 537.610. The waiver is only for the purposes of the insurance purchased per the statute. It is undisputed that the city purchased a comprehensive policy of insurance with One Beacon Insurance, and that insurance policy includes coverage for law enforcement liability. The city and its police officer employees, or any of their employees for that matter, are insureds under the policy. The court will recall in its decision earlier than now, in 1993, the North Kansas City Hospital versus Russell case, where this court, clarified its position and established that a governmental entity, such as the city, and it was the city of North Kansas City in the Russell case, can preserve by an insurance endorsement, or can it preserve in their insurance policy, sovereign immunity, subject to the exceptions that we've already discussed, the statutory exceptions of dangerous condition, operation of a motor vehicle, and proprietary function. The city's One Beacon policy has an endorsement that explicitly preserves the city's sovereign immunity as allowed by Missouri statute and years of Missouri jurisprudence. In fact, each case that I have been able to find, and I've looked at them all, each case that considers a specific endorsement preserving the municipalities or the governmental entity's sovereign immunity has been held to preserve that entity's sovereign immunity.
And the opposing counsel argues there's some ambiguity in the endorsement because of the use of the word including, and we do resolve ambiguities. We would resolve ambiguities against you. Can you address that?
I believe that that's incorrect, Judge, because this is not a simple breach of contract case. It's not a simple contract interpretation case because for a couple of reasons. One, this issue involves immunity. The case law that is cited Respondents' Counsel are all breach of contract cases. They're all non-immunity cases. this is a unique case. The plaintiff bears the heavy burden, he maintains the heavy burden to prove an exception to sovereign immunity. And any, I guess, doubt is resolved in favor of immunity because of the simple nature of the strong immunity. It's the rule in Missouri. It's not the exception like other states. The sovereign is immune, and any exception is narrowly defined and strictly construed. And the general...
And where does the sovereign immunity come from? Statute, common law, or a constitution?
Both, Judge. Not the Constitution. It comes from historically, it comes from common law. But then Chapter 537 was adopted in 1987, I believe, it codified and reinstated sovereign immunity and then codified it as law of the land, except for the two exceptions of dangerous conditions of land and operation of motor vehicle. So the statute as it adopted revived sovereign immunity and made it statutory. And the city's sovereign immunity, and I cited each one of these, each of the cases, before the enactment of the sovereign immunity statute, operation of a police force, that, you know, any, there's no claims in this case for failure to train. There's no claims in this case for any other thing against the city except for vicarious liability. The operation of a city's police department is a governmental function as a matter of law, as a matter of well-settled law. And therefore, even if you don't have the statute, well, I take that back. The statute revamps the old sovereign immunity, or brings back old sovereign immunity and makes it law, makes it statute.
And why did they pass the statute?
Because of a court case that called into question the city's sovereign immunity.
Justice Seiler, I assume.
I'm sorry?
Justice Seiler, I believe, made that decision.
Yes, sir. But in its wisdom, the legislature enacted 537-600, and sovereign immunity was back as law of the land statutorily.
Reinstated common law as it had been prior to this court's decision.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, would you discuss the city's insurance policy that was attached to the petition that does not cover the time period that we're concerned with here?
Certainly. Originally, and this issue just came up with the briefs. The respondent, there was no issue. The respondent received, attached as an attachment to the reply brief. Prior to filing suit, the plaintiffs were provided with a certified copy, the correct copy. We filed the motion for summary judgment, unfortunately, a identical policy, language is identical, but it is for the policy period directly after. The correct policy that was originally provided to the plaintiffs was 02. 03, which is identical, same language, is there. The only difference is the date. As I stated in the briefs, in summary judgment, plaintiff admitted the policy existed. Plaintiff admitted the policy language endorsement existed and admitted the language. In the petition for writ of prohibition, they admitted the coverage. They admitted the language of the endorsement.
But they said it was ambiguous. I mean, they said the language is ambiguous. How do you respond to that?
Did I answer your question?
How would the court address that if we were to rule in your favor?
I say it's really not an issue. Because it's the policy language itself that's the issue. And there's no dispute. It's undisputed.
In fact, if we went on, if we said that's not true and you couldn't correct the policy on appeal, then there would be a failure to show there was any insurance at all. So you would win on that basis.
That was another issue I was going to bring up, if it so arose, that if the burden is on the plaintiff to establish the waiver, if the plaintiffs assert that there is no coverage before the court, then we have sovereign immunity as a matter of law.
On the other hand, you're the ones that provided that policy and said it covered, so that
and
would
I
not
tried and it. I and that's why we tried to correct that inadvertence, because there's really no issue.
Is this something where we have to clarify what the law is and remand for substitution of the correct policy below?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because of the admissions of the plaintiff that there is no issue as to policy coverage. There is no issue as to the language. We're just dealing with a date. But the parties have admitted the uncontroverted fact that the policy existed, the policy language is there. And Judge, to address your point on ambiguity, if you look at the endorsement, and again, I want to incorporate my brief just in case I run out of time. But if you look at the endorsement, it says, "This policy and any coverages associated therewith does not constitute nor reflect an intent by you to waive or forego any defenses of sovereign immunity or sovereign and governmental immunity available to any insured, whether based on statutes, common law, or otherwise, including Section 537.610 or any amendments or revised statute, Section 71.185, or any amendments." That's not ambiguous. That's clear. That states a specific intent to preserve sovereign immunity. And every single case that has a clause or an endorsement or policy language in an insurance policy with a municipality or a governmental entity preserves sovereign immunity. And that is why the court should make its writ permanent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what do you think about that?
May it please the court. Chris Sweeney on behalf of respondent. First of all, there is a case. It's called, and it's not in my brief, and it's not in his brief, and I found it when preparing for argument. And I'm going to butcher the plaintiff's name in the case.
And you're going to send us a copy of that?
Yeah, Schober versus City of Kinloch, 328 Southwest 3rd, 723. In that case, the court found the ambiguity in the policy issued to a sovereign and reversed summary judgment and remanded it to the trial court.
Go ahead.
So he just read one endorsement, right, to the policy. And our cases consistently hold that you don't get to interpret a policy by isolating just one clause of it. And in fact, that is what it is. It's a clause. It's not even a complete sentence because it says this policy is not meant to constitute, and then it trails off into.
But aren't you arguing the endorsement being different than the main policy creates an ambiguity? But that's the whole point of endorsements, is to modify basic policy. That's part of the coverage provision.
Yeah, that's not what I'm arguing. It's just that. So then there's another endorsement right after the endorsement they rely upon, which specifically sets the limits for their liability, for the governmental entity's liability. If there is no coverage for the governmental entity, we don't need this additional endorsement.
Well, can you address their argument that provides coverage for the two areas in which immunity is waived under the statute, and that provides the limits of liability on those?
That's right. Again, that's why you need to read the whole policy.
Mm-hmm.
There is a business automobile coverage form mm-hmm. in this policy that provides coverage for the operation of motor vehicles. And in fact, this law enforcement liability form excludes coverage for that.
Okay,
so this endorsement cannot be addressing that issue.
And the same with the dangerous condition of property.
On the dangerous condition of property, there's a general liability form in this policy.
Counselor, what about this issue about whether or not you want the correct policy to be substituted? I mean, if there wasn't a policy in effect during the time, don't you have a serious problem of proof?
I don't, because we're here on their summary judgment motion. They have the burden to prove the indisputable right to judgment as a matter of law. That's their burden.
If they
don't have a policy and you haven't, if you don't demonstrate that there's a policy in effect that waives sovereign immunity, how do you overcome the grant of summary judgment in their favor?
So we pled in our petition that there's been a waiver as a result of an insurance policy. Then they tried to come forward in summary judgment and prove as a matter of law that we were wrong, right? Well, and then they, to do that, they produced a policy in the summary judgment that wasn't the policy in effect at the time of the injuries. And so they haven't controverted our fact in our petition that there was, in fact, a policy.
But don't, isn't it your burden, because you're claiming that there's a policy that waives sovereign immunity, it's your burden to show not just that you pled that there was, but to show facts supporting those pleadings. And you failed to produce a policy showing coverage. Haven't you failed in your burden?
Right. No, they,
I mean, maybe, I understand that, right, that there's equitable reasons why you should have an opportunity to substitute the right policy, but...
They, in their statement of facts, they admitted there's coverage for law enforcement liability. And we admitted that. Because there is coverage for the city for law enforcement liability. That waives their sovereign immunity. Now, the fact that they've attached the wrong policy to try to support their defense that, well, there was an endorsement in the policy that even though the policy itself provides law enforcement liability, it doesn't waive immunity.
Have you waived this? Excuse me, I'm sorry. Have you waived this argument but not bringing it up until your briefs and by your opposing counsel's statements that you admitted this was the right policy and you admitted this was coverage?
Yeah, and again, I want to be clear. We never admitted it was the right policy, and we weren't trying to play games. We didn't recognize it until the briefing. They stated in their statement of facts, we have coverage for law enforcement liability. We said, admitted. Then they said, there is an endorsement that says this, and we said, admitted. Okay, but we may have waived it. My point is, if you're going to say the trial court exceeded his jurisdiction or that he abused his discretion when he didn't have the right policy in front of him, that seems inequitable.
There doesn't seem to be a dispute that the language of the two is identical. So if we were to decide based on the wrong policy, would it be just a matter of substituting, of then going back and producing the right policy and bringing everything and coming back up here in the identical issues for us to resolve, in effect? Because
yes,
there's no dispute, the policy language is identical. It's just a different year.
Yeah, no, I take Mr. Heigl at his word that the policy is identical. I don't know.
You haven't seen it.
I'm sure I have. I haven't. Okay. I haven't looked through it. But whether or not the court would take the writ again, whether or not Judge Great would rule the same again, whether or not Mr. Heigl's client would pay him to file a writ again, all
it
that.
So we're here on a summary judgment. Mm-hmm. At the risk of sounding au courant, your admission of the facts, despite whatever policy is there or not, your admission of the facts with summary judgment would trump. Would trump the whatever policies there. You admitted the facts that there was such coverage.
Yeah, if that's the position, we're fine with that. Again, we thought because we discovered in briefing that the wrong policy was attached that we should bring it to the court's attention, and that's what we've done.
Counsel,
yes,
let me ask a practical question. If the city's dismissed, you still proceed against the officers, correct?
Correct, yes, sir.
And if they're found liable, they are insured under the policy, they would seem to have coverage for this incident, or at least the coverage, if there's going to be a coverage dispute, it wouldn't be any different than the one the city would have. How are you worse off with the city out of the lawsuit?
Well, I think jurors, whether they should be or not, are influenced by the parties in the case. And so, if you're from a defense perspective, your view is that jurors give too much money when there is an entity involved as opposed to just an individual. And from the plaintiff's perspective, we think if there's just individuals involved, the jurors award too little damages and don't fully compensate. And so to have all the parties that the law allows in front of the jury has an impact, practically speaking, on a jury's verdict.
But you're limited to one recovery of your damages.
Absolutely.
That would be true whether there are five insureds or six.
Absolutely. That's correct. But on that point about the employees are insureds under this policy, and there's a $2 million per wrongful act coverage for the employees. For the city, this endorsement says, yeah, that $2 million per wrongful act coverage, that doesn't apply for the city. For the city, there's a $300,000 per claimant limit that applies to them. So if this law enforcement liability form for government risk, that's the title of it, for government risk, doesn't give any coverage to them, there is no need to set any liability limit for them at all. And you say, well, what about the automobiles? It's covered in another part of the policy, and the limit set forth for the automobile coverage is in that part of the policy. What about dangerous condition on the property? That's in the general liability part of the policy. And the liability limits for the city are set out in that part of the policy. This is for law enforcement liability for government risk.
What is the case law regarding a public entity's ability to buy coverage and still waive sovereign immunity, and still not waive sovereign immunity by express provision?
Absolutely. That's unquestionable, that the city can buy insurance and preserve immunity through an endorsement and through clear policy language. And that's, the endorsement isn't like some standalone provision that gets to be interpreted all by itself. It has to be discussed in the context of the policy. So in looking at their immunity provision in the context of this other endorsement that sets limits of liability for them, it appears that what they want to do is preserve.
But they can buy coverage and have that coverage be limited as to the amount of the coverage and still not waive by express provision, not waive sovereign immunity.
Buying coverage doesn't waive it. You have to expressly waive it, in other words.
No, you don't have to expressly waive it. Buying coverage does, in fact, waive it. But if you have an endorsement, you can preserve it by an endorsement.
But you can limit what the coverage is.
So,
if you limit what the coverage is, how does that not fall within the statement that they don't intend to waive immunity?
Well, it creates this conflict, right? It creates this ambiguity. You have in one part of the policy saying, in this one endorsement, there is no coverage for the city. They preserve their immunity. But in this other part, specifically in its endorsement following the part saying there is no coverage, well, yeah, in fact, there is coverage for their governmental liability in these limits. So it's similar to the underinsured motorist cases where in one part of the policy it says no stacking, and then another part of the policy it says excess coverage. And we say, all right, how do you reconcile those two?
And opposing counsel says if there is any ambiguity, then it's resolved in their favor because you're asking for an exception to sovereign immunity, which otherwise applies.
Yeah, and this court has never held that, right? In every case that this court has dealt with sovereign immunity, it has said the statute is to be strictly construed, not the insurance policy. And in fact, what this court has said about insurance policies is it's a contract designed to provide protection. And so because that's what it's designed to do, we're going to, if at all possible, reasonably possible, we're going to interpret it as providing that protection. And so that's...
Tell me how they have not avoided waiver of sovereign immunity by saying this does not reflect an intent to waive or forgo any defenses of sovereign immunity and governmental immunity available to any insured, whether based upon statute, common law, or otherwise. I mean, that on its face seems quite clear that it's waiving, that it's saying it's not waiving sovereign immunity under statute, common law, or otherwise. And you're saying that's made ambiguous by something that, that would provide coverage if this denial of waiver didn't apply.
Yeah, again, it's like saying, okay, this anti-stacking provision says no stacking. So, but there are other provisions that can make it ambiguous. And
is there a different standard for those automobile policies which are purchased by uneducated consumers and the standard for which we would review, for example, legal malpractice insurance, medical malpractice insurance, governmental insurance for cities who have counsel on staff? Should we look at these differently? I mean, that seems like to be every case that you cite in your favor is a consumer case.
Yeah, one's against a jewelry company where the jewelry company asserts it. So it's they're not all consumer, not all individuals. I mean, they're consumers of insurance policies. We're all consumers of insurance policies. But so the cases include more than just individuals, if that's the question. And whether the court wants to say for companies, you don't get that rule. Again, I'm not aware of any case where you all have said that. But
well, the working case out of the Western District Court of Appeals interpreting a legal malpractice coverage said it would be reviewed as like a reasonably competent lawyer. That's kind of a specialty policy. I'm just trying to figure out these policies available to governmental entities like cities should be viewed at differently than consumer policies for auto coverage.
Yeah, in the Topps case, which is cited in both briefs, Topps versus City of Country Club Hills, the Eastern District undertook to evaluate the policy just as it does for every individual. And we've cited a case in our brief where this court said when a sovereign enters into a contract, that contract is to be interpreted just as we interpret contracts for individuals. So I don't know that any special rule ought to apply to them with regard to interpreting this insurance policy. But if you read their entire attempt to preserve immunity, it includes specific reference to 771.185 and to 537.610. Neither one of those statutes provides complete immunity to the city. Both those statutes provide immunity above caps or above insurance limits. And so if you read that endorsement in total and then read the other endorsement, which specifically sets limits, you can reconcile the two to say what they wanted to do was preserve their immunity above that $300,000 per claimant limit, even though the policy had a $2 million per wrongful act limit. That limit, we're not doing that. We're doing this $300,000 limit because we're preserving our immunity above this $200,000 limit. Or
$300,000. The sentence that you're referencing says this policy and any of the coverages associated therewith does not constitute nor reflect an intent by you to waive or forego any of the defenses. And then it goes on to say including those statutes, but it doesn't limit it to those statutes. And it expressly says any of the coverages in the policy is not an intent to waive sovereign immunity. So how does that not defeat your argument?
Well, again, the best I can do is analogize it to these underinsured cases where they unequivocally say there is no stacking. But when there's another part of the policy that creates a conflict, then we either have to try to resolve the conflict or one loses to the other. And generally in insurance cases, coverage wins out over non-coverage. But I discussed at length about the including and whether that is saying, for example, 71185, or whether it's actually saying these are the two that we're talking about. And there's various cases that go both ways on that.
Would you send a letter to the court with citing the case that you mentioned today?
Yes, Your Honor.
With a copy to opposing counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the court. This is not a stacking case. This is a sovereign immunity case. He is an expert on stacking. He is an expert on insurance policy interpretation. This is not what this case is about.
But it is about interpreting an insurance policy. He's right, and we have rules for interpreting contracts, and the drafter, it's construed against the drafter.
But the respondent or the Greens don't have standing to make that argument. They're not at a party to this insurance contract. They're not a third-party beneficiary to this insurance contract. They're not a judgment creditor that can enforce the contract. That's where the issue lies. The plaintiffs don't have the right or don't have standing to enforce this policy. That's where the
Why are we here? Aren't they suing on it to get coverage under it?
No.
I mean, they're trying to sue your client based on this waiver, so it's clearly very relevant to their claim.
Perhaps, but this is a unique circumstance because of the city's sovereign immunity. And it was error not to grant summary judgment. They still have coverage. The policy is not illusory.
Can you address why there's that third coverage, since there's policy limits for the two exceptions set forth in the statute, and then there's a third set of limits that they say would only apply if the insurance policy created a waiver? Can you address that argument?
Yes, because this is a national policy. One Beacon issues policies nationwide to municipalities. Missouri law is different than other states, and they have the endorsement and the limits that are set that are unique to Missouri. As you can see, all of the endorsements and the limits are related to the Missouri statutes that provide for them. And the issue of the Topps case and the other cases which specifically deal with MOPRM. MOPRM is a statutorily created risk sharing pool for Missouri public entities. It's not an insurance policy. It's not, and their endorsement is created by the MOPRM was created by Chapter 537 back at the same time the sovereign immunity statute was adopted. It's a totally unique thing, a totally unique issue because there's no issue with other states. It's a Missouri. It preserves sovereign immunity. It does. It follows the statute. The One Beacon policy attempts to take a national policy and provide the immunities that are allowed to municipalities and government entities in Missouri. That's allowed by uniqueness of Missouri law, and that's why we're here. This is not a simple breach of contract case. This is not a stacking case. This is a sovereign immunity case, and this court's jurisprudence and case law says when you have an endorsement like we have, it prevails over all of the other issues of the policy. His arguments about all these different coverages, it's a comprehensive policy for everything other than the police department or law enforcement. It covers every single facet of the city's liability. And so it's unique in that regard.
Thank you. Your time is up. Case will be submitted.